Science and technology are an increasingly large part of our lives. We take a look at the interface between science and history, economics, philosophy, ethics, religion, and culture. That's Spark Dialogue Podcast, where it all comes together. I'm your host, Elizabeth Fernandez. Noise is everywhere in our lives. Sometimes it can be quite pleasant, like the babbling of a stream or a gentle rainfall. Other times it can be actually harmful, like prolonged exposure to jackhammers, roaring trains, or even loud metal music. But have you ever thought of quantifying the noise in your life? How would you go about it? Today we're talking to Julia Buaya, a digital fellow at the University of Geneva and a mobile crowd sensing researcher. Julia has come up with a clever way of getting massive amount of data on noise levels by creating an app for a smartphone and encouraging people to use it to take data on noise levels in their own neighborhoods, particularly in San Francisco and in Geneva. This idea is crowd sensing, or asking a large number of people to take data, more data than a single scientist or group of scientists could take themselves. So welcome to the podcast, Julia.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Let's talk first about some noise in our lives. So I mentioned some things in the introduction, like jackhammers or babbling brook or things like this. How would you quantify noise levels like this? What's typically done?
So usually you use decibels. So that's the unit in which you measure noise levels. There are tables which kind of indicate certain decibel corresponds. What we gave to the participants was like the information of, okay, you're collecting noise levels, right? And levels usually correspond to something in real life. It could be many things. As you said, it could be something pleasant or something that's not pleasant. Usually, clearly, like if you have a high level of noise, then it's usually something that's not very pleasant and sometimes even harmful for the ears. And I think like starting with 80 decibels, for example, can be harmful. And 80 decibels, we have this table to kind of make it more clear to the general public, would be something like heavy traffic, a window air conditioner, a very noisy restaurant, and which is also maybe something you want to avoid, or a power lawnmower. And everything above would be really like a school dance, which could be pleasant sometimes, of course, or up to a gunshot, which would be like 140 decibels, right? And a normal conversation would be something like 40 decibels.
For people who have prolonged exposure to these loud noises, even you mentioned air conditioning in your window that's going all day, what kind of health side effects does this cause?
What we did is we collected this map to get this information that which can be evaluated by, or which is actually evaluated by the Geneva hospitals. So they have a research group on relations between noise levels and certain diseases. And I think my point was not to say, okay, I know noises are harmful and you shouldn't be exposed to it. It's more a way of collecting data, making it public, and making it accessible to everyone to kind of work with it.
You're using this idea called crowd sensing. Right. So basically, it would be difficult for you and your team to go out all over these cities and to take all these data points yourself. But what you're doing is asking people to just use their smartphones, which they have on them, as like a scientific device, which is kind of cool to take this data themselves. Right. And so you actually have like a little app that they can download and that they can participate in this project. And so what does this app do? What is your app asking these people to do?
So this app is asking these people to, at certain times, not all the time, as I said, like we try to collect data in a way that it's not too much of a load for the people. So we're asking the people to now and then, especially in moments where I think it would be interesting to know the level of noise, to collect this kind of information. And to the app will record for some time, measure the decibel, and upload the decibels to an online map. It's not recording any conversations. And I think the special thing about our app and our whole project is that we kind of do the communication with the participants. We have two separate streams of communication. One is way to upload information, and the other one is kind of to ask people when to collect data. And we have these two separate streams in order to integrate factors relevant to privacy. Our goal is to have this information without tracking the people, actually. So that's kind of what our app is doing.
you mentioned not wanting to be too much of a burden of the people who are taking it, obviously, because if it's too much of a burden, they won't want to do it. Right. So do people actually choose when the microphone is taking data, or do they have to push a button to choose when the data is taken?
We said we let the people decide when to collect data. So it's not just starting in the background and starting to collect data, but we actually let the people decide, okay, when they will participate. And this has advantages and disadvantages. And my feeling is also it somehow might be related to the culture you're living in. I would say, like, in Switzerland, there's a tendency to kind of not want data to be collected in the background, to not be aware of what kind of data is collected when and so on. So that's how we started this whole app and the whole application. When I went to San Francisco, where we actually did the application, I had the feeling that it was much, much less an issue, actually, to have something being collected in the background. So I think it was a very, very interesting experience to see how different communities also have different aspects. And it's also good feedback to say, okay, maybe you can do it. We could kind of change the way of collecting data in sometimes having it run in the background and sometimes not, depending on the person.
That's interesting. Did you see a cultural difference?
No, I mean, it's very subjective. I don't have, just with the participants I work with. So where we actually tested the task allocation algorithm. So asking the people to collect data at certain times. And then afterwards, we had a questionnaire and asked people how they feel about it. And one aspect was also privacy and asking them directly. And I think it was 75% which answered, for them, it's no issue. They didn't think about data being collected somewhere or being exposed. And here in Geneva, was completely different. It was very, very important for the people.
Why are you doing crowd sensing to begin with? Why is this a good idea and perhaps a better idea than just taking the data yourself?
Yeah, so crowdsourcing has been around for some time, I would say at least 20 years. the idea is to use or leverage the collective intelligence of many to solve a certain problem. There exist many examples. For example, Wikipedia. Wikipedia, I think, is one of the most prominent examples where you have, you have lots of volunteers which all together produce this this online information platform. And it's not just one company kind of saying, okay, we want articles on this topic. And it's something that kind of involves from the collective intelligence of many. And I think it would almost be impossible to kind of direct something like this from a central, the government and so on. So it's kind of this idea of collective intelligence which could actually work. Then there exist also examples, also little experiments you could do yourself maybe. It's like if you ask a crowd, the experiments of asking a crowd, for example, to guess the height of a certain person. And if you take the answers and the average, the probability the average answer is correct is very, very high. So there are lots of experiments, which are very, very funny, where you see that if you ask many, many people, even if they're not experts, if you take their answers together, you will have a very, very good answer. And that's the whole idea. So it's like, first of all, many people can give good answers. And second of all, it's also a way of sharing or distributing work. You know, not having just one person do it or three, but kind of much less work because so many people are participating.
And I guess this is one way to weed out the bad data as well.
Exactly.
When you have a lot of people participating, and if all their data points are consistent except for this one data point way over here.
Yeah, I mean, there's always, I would say there's a trade-off. There's a trade-off between saying, okay, I asked many, many people. There are a few that are not experts that will give answers that are not correct. I mean, the probability is high that the answer is still correct. And usually you have much, much less work.
Yeah.
And it's usually also cheaper. And especially for projects that are for the public and so on, sometimes they're not well funded. It's a very, very good way to get information or other things.
Yeah, so when people are using this app, I was wondering how you discriminate between these different data points that you're getting from people all over. So let's say there's someone walking through a park and they are recording very quiet levels of noise.
Mm.
But right next door to this park, there's an office building that has a lot of people in it, and they're recording the data that is in a conference room with a bunch of people talking at once. And then right next to that could be, you know, someone on the BART on the train, and it's really loud going through a tunnel.
Yeah.
So how do you discriminate between these different data points, or do you even want to discriminate between them?
I'm not discriminating. I'm collecting the data without any judgment.
So you did this in two different cities. So you did it in Geneva and you did it in San Francisco.
Right.
On the website that you have like a little map with all the locations that people are taking data with the decibels of each location.
Yeah.
Of the noise they're taking. So have you noticed any trends to what areas are noisy and what areas are more quiet?
I have to say that the end are quite according to what would be my intuition too, right? So you have a certain roads which are very noisy. So there were not so many surprises, which is also fine, I think. Right, you have these big streets and people that live there are exposed to noise and maybe there could be something done. So it was quite, according to the intuition, but a certain proof level there now, which I find very good.
So one thing I'm curious about is, did you notice any change in noise with neighborhood, especially like if there's a difference in the economic status of the people who tend to live in that neighborhood? Like, does a neighborhood seem to be more noisy or less noisy, depending on something like that?
I'm not enough an expert of the San Francisco Bay Area. The only thing what I know is more from feedback. I was like, we had this one event in San Francisco at the end of the application. There were people with very, very different background, and there was this one guy from the I think it was a Tenderloin area.
The Tenderloin.
Right. And he told me he was very, very interested in noise levels and was saying that there is a tendency of thinking that people in areas that have a lower class areas, I don't know how you want to stamp them, but are less interested in these factors, environmental factors that influence, for example, your stress level and so on. And that this is completely not true. So that's the only thing I can say. I could not see just from the map, okay, there are areas that are more noisy and others that are less noisy. But it's more, I think what's actually interesting is that at least from the feedback I got, people in kind of all areas are interested in noise levels. It really depends rather on the individual. Yeah.
In order to get people to download this app and actually participate, I could see it could go one of two ways. Like, either they're interested in this project in the first place, or they live in a particularly noisy neighborhood and they want to maybe see some sort of change come about this. Mm-hmm. But then there's also people who want some sort of incentive to participate. And so I know that you've done a couple different models of getting people to participate. So what kind of things have you tried and how successful were they?
The first project was to just say, okay, this is interesting, please participate. This can benefit the community, but also yourself, because you get some information about your environment. This, I think, if you talk to the right people, this already works pretty well. So, for example, in San Francisco, I was in contact with many people that were interested in actually in science and the environment and so on. So they participated. This worked out fine. Now, if you want to have a very, very good coverage and involve more people, usually you have to have some kind of incentive. That's right. So what we did, we created a game. But we did it with students from the university. So they had this relation to us already because we're also from the university. But there we had like a point system because we didn't want them to overuse the app, because the thing is, like, the theory behind it is that we say if somebody uses the app too much over the day, he will not use it for a longer period of time. And we wanted to kind of have people engage for a longer period of time. So we did this game based on something that's called the prisoner's dilemma. I'm not sure if you heard about it. It's kind of like if you collect a data point, if a new data point is on the map, you get 1 point. And then for every data point you collected yourself, you get a negative point, which means only if the whole group together collects data, it can gain points. It's a bit mathematical, but this worked out very, very well, kind of. So this is what we did. So you have kind of point games where you don't collect too much. You let the others collect. Also, you want to cover the map, and we have these kind of little games, which might sound a bit complicated, but from a mathematical point of view, you can evaluate them and see that in the end you will get a good coverage.
in the Bay Area, didn't you have like a monetary reward as well?
Yeah, we had a monetary reward, but in the end, we saw that nobody was interested in it, actually, which was interesting to see.
Oh, that's interesting.
To get the monetary reward, we had very little requirements. So I think 5 data points at least. And to fill out the questionnaire and to kind of come up to me and say, okay, I want to participate. But no one was interested in actually getting the money. They were all like doing it for the general good.
Okay, so most of the people that you see participate are actually interested in the project rather than just out to get some money or a prize or something like this. Okay.
Yeah, so far, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. Yeah, and so you mentioned one of the main concerns people might have in downloading an app like this is privacy. So what do you do in order to make sure that people's data stays private?
The data is collected completely anonymously, so I don't know who's sending me the data. Right. So the data points you see on the map are the data points people collected. And I also don't collect any information from whom it's coming. And on the other side, we kind of still want to tell the people to collect data. So we had two different streams, one communication stream where we say, OK, could you please collect data there and there? And the other one is collecting data where we don't register who's collecting their data. And a way of doing this is to use, for example, K-anonymous algorithms where you say, okay, at the same time, you ask several people to do the same thing to make sure you cannot say this one person gave me the data, but it could be several people.
So do you know of any other examples of science or studies like this that are being done using crowd sensing?
There are actually so many. It's really like there's so many scientific articles these days. One example which I like very much is, for example, at MIT, they have a project called, it's called Mahali, I think. And it's a project on weather conditions in rural areas in East Africa. So what they say is that almost everyone has a smartphone, even in rural areas where it's very difficult to install certain instruments to measure weather conditions. But the powerful sensors in smartphones can actually be used to collect data, which altogether gives an idea. And again, it's biased. That's the thing with crowdsourcing, with citizen science, you trust the people collecting the data because you're not there. You trust many people together. So they're using their sensors to collect information, and it's used to create a public weather map, for example.
Thank you so much for joining us today on the podcast.
Thanks.
This is Elizabeth Fernandez for Spark Dialogue Podcast. You can learn more about this podcast series on sparkdialogue.com or on social media on facebook.com/sparkdialogue or on Twitter @sparkdialogue. I would also appreciate a rating or a review that you happen to send our way. You can also learn how to subscribe to this podcast on our website. This is Elizabeth Fernandez, and thanks for listening.